Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Robert McChesney, who is the Gutzel Endowed Professor in the Department of Communications at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. He, along with John Nichols, co-founded the media reform organization Free Press, and Robert McChesney and John Nichols have co-authored The Death and Life of American Journalism, The Media Revolution That Will Begin the World Again, Will the Last Reporter Turn Out the Lights, The Collapse of Journalism and What Can Be Done to Fix It, and their latest book is Dollarocracy, How the Money and Media Election Complex is Destroying America. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert McChesney.
My pleasure, Ian.
And you and John came up with the calculated a record-breaking $10 billion was spent in the 2012 election campaign, much of it on political advertising. And while there have been other figures that are seven-something billion, give us your reasoning as to why your figure is more accurate than the lesser figure, which is bad enough to begin with.
Well, the reason is that the lesser figure that is used is usually only includes federal races, congressional and presidential. And I think that figure that was given was originally $6 billion. It's been upgraded to $7 billion since then. And our initial figure was $10 billion because we included state, local, referenda, judicial races. And also, we're probably closer to $11 billion now. In the last year, a lot of spending has come forward in the filings that have been done. And that's one of the things that's striking about spending in elections in America compared to virtually all other democracies, which is the reporting rules are so lax and the enforcement so lax that we still will never know exactly how much was spent. It's probably much, even more than we know. It keeps going up. As I said, we're closing in on $11 billion now. And I should also say, to put this into context compared to other countries, you know, Germany held national elections a few months ago and elected a new government. And for every dollar German politicians spent and parties and donors and politicians spent per voter in Germany in their national elections, in 2012, the United States, just for our congressional and presidential races, the equivalent, spent $35 per voter. We're outspending Germany 35 to 1, and Germany is the norm. That's how it is the rest of the world. We're the outlier.
Well, according to the Campaign Finance Institute, the average cost of winning a House seat has risen to about $1.6 million from 2012, which is 2 years late, these figures, up from $845,000 in 2000. And for the Senate, the average cost now in 2012, I should say, is $10.3 million, up from $7.2 million in 2000. So there's considerable inflation there, wouldn't you say?
I'd say, and also I think something to keep in mind is that for the House seats in particular, those average figures don't mean a lot because around two-thirds of the races for the House of Representatives are gerrymandered. So there's really not any contest there, and there doesn't need to be much spending. There are races in which the parties have divvied it up. In California, I think, has less of that now than most states. Like Wisconsin, where I live most of the year, has been, even though it's a 50-50 state in terms of voters and Republican-Democrat, more or less, or slightly more Democratic, in our congressional races, they're virtually all landslides for one part or the other. They divided it up, so there's really no contest. And as a result of that, if you look at the House races, for just the competitive races, the ones that are not gerrymandered into being sort of one-party state districts, then the figures are dramatically higher than what you gave.
Again, I'm speaking with Robert McChesney, who is the Gutzel Endowed Professor in the Department of Communications at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. He, along with John Nichols, co-founded the media reform organization Free Press, and they've written together The Death and Life of American Journalism, The Media Revolution That Will Begin the World Again, Will the Last Reporter Turn Out the Lights, The Collapse of Journalism and What Can Be Done to Fix It, and their latest book is Dollarocracy, How the Money and Media Election Complex is Destroying America. Now, apparently some of the congressmen and senators are getting more creative with their money-raising efforts. It's no longer the de rigueur rubber chicken political fundraising dinners, but Senator Lindsey Graham will entertain you with Elvis impersonators. Senator David Vitter of Louisiana will invite you to hunt alligators for $5,000. And in your state of Wisconsin, Bob, the Lumberjack World Championships apparently featured hometown Republican Congressman and former Lumberjack Sean Duffy. You could join him, chop down some trees for a $1,000 per person or $2,000 per political action committee. So is this what we have to look forward to, entertainment instead of rubber chickens?
Well, you know, I think that's actually fairly benign compared to what the real action is going on. You know, the sort of stuff you just described, Ian, is stuff that's basically pitched maybe at 2 to 5% of the population that has the sort of money that could afford to drop a few thousand dollars on a race, and it wouldn't really affect their standard of living, that sort of disposable income, to do that routinely on races. And that's bad enough as it is. It means that effectively the top few percent of the American population are the relevant people for these politicians. But I think what we're seeing that's far more insidious and what we chronicle in the book is that with the post-Citizens United era in particular, where there's really no accountability, we're seeing very wealthy individuals throw money into politics that would make a mockery of the lumberjack people dropping $1,000 or $2,000. I mean, they're dropping, in the case of the Koch brothers, $200 or $300 million on the 2012 election cycle. In the case of Shelley Adelson, maybe a couple $100 million. And in the cases like this, it's not just the national races. We focus oftentimes on the president or the Senate races or even House races. But sometimes the worst damage comes on judicial races or referenda races at the local and state level or city council and mayor races, where a powerful interest can now go in if it's got a stake in an issue and just flood a race with money. And since there's no journalism coverage to speak of for the most part of most races, they can effectively buy an outcome.
So, Robert McChesney, as you pointed out in your new book, Dollarocracy, how the money and media election complex is destroying America, that the last election year it cost at least $10 billion, and this coming election year, it's an off year, but it could cost considerably, certainly more than it used to cost. And most of this money goes to political advertising. So doesn't the mainstream media here, basically, aren't they benefiting from a broken system? Because if during these elections, everybody's clamoring for media time to flood the airwaves with advertising, and now because of Citizens United, the billionaires don't have to attribute it to the fact that they're behind these phony front groups. Isn't the media itself unlikely to want to reform a process from which they are making a fortune?
Indeed. In fact, that's one of the arguments of our book. The subtitle of our book talks about the money and media election complex that's destroying America. And a key part of our argument is that commercial television broadcasters and corporate media they are like the equivalent of military contractors to the military-industrial complex, because the vast majority of this $11 billion goes to TV ads, the majority of it. The closer the race, the higher the percentage. And these ads are basically manna from heaven for the handful of companies that own all the TV stations in the country. For example, in 1992, the average U.S. commercial TV station got maybe 2 or 3% of its total revenues from candidate political advertising. By 2012, depending on the market you were looking at, the amount went usually in the 15 to 20% at the low end to the 35 to 40% at the high end of all revenues, total revenues, for the year came from political advertising. I mean, this has been, and the Wall Street analysts who assess this have all been quite candid about it. This has made commercial broadcasting in this country extraordinarily profitable and lucrative. because it's basically a huge subsidy of this industry, this huge source of money. And it just as the amount of advertising has increased with these inane and offensive ads, TV ads, I might add, for candidates, which are illegal in most democracies, they're regarded as toxic propaganda. But just as the airways are flooded with these ads in America, at the same time, commercial news media connected to radio and television has basically stopped covering politics.
Well, but that only leaves the alternative media, and that's not particularly strong in America.
You know, that's such a great point. We talk about this at some length in the book, too. In most other democracies, certainly in the West, Western Europe, and in East Asia, like Japan, you have very strong nonprofit, non-commercial radio and television sectors, which cover politics extensively. And as a result, the commercial broadcasters sort of have to get their act together to stay in the game. That's one of the reasons, for example, the Guardian newspaper claims its political coverage is good. It's because it knows the BBC is there, sort of a non-commercial competitive alternative. And in the United States, our public broadcasting and community broadcasting has been very undernourished and has not done a very good job, even with what nourishment they've had, of covering politics. And what's most regrettable, I think, is that community radio broadcasting, which includes stations like the Civica chain, they've tried at times and sometimes done superior work. But increasingly, I think they're really overwhelmed, too, and they can barely make a dent in sort of all the commercial propaganda. You know, I recently have been reading about changes, you know, at Pacifica, which is really, the flagship of community broadcasting, not only in the United States, but in the world. It's been such a central role in bringing issues to light for decades, generations that wouldn't get covered otherwise. And now it looks like there's a threat, from what I can see, that Pacifica may discontinue this mission of being this feisty advocate of the dispossessed and turn more into sort of some sort of new age operation, which is a very dubious value. I'm not an expert on this, but what I'm reading about it gives me cause for concern. I don't know if you want to say anything about this, Ian.
Unfortunately, I'm under a gag order here. I was recently suspended, and I've been told that if I say anything about what's happening at Pacifica, I'll immediately be fired. So I'd like to answer your question.
Please don't, then. I don't want you to be fired.
Okay. So, again, Rob McChesney, the author with John Nichols of Dollarocracy, How the Money and Media Election Complex is Destroying America. What's your sense, then, given the limitations of getting the real word out, and obviously our elections are no longer about candidates and ideas, they're about money. You know, I remember people like William Proxmire, who would be routinely reelected in, I think, again, your state, Wisconsin, for a budget of $500 per cycle. That's all he would spend. What was his magic, and why don't we have people like Proxmire? I know we have Bernie Sanders, but a lot of that's to do with the state of Vermont.
You know, one of the things we do in the book is we look at the evolution of this modern election system and this reliance on big money and television advertising. And what was striking to us, and really I wasn't familiar with this until I did the research of the book, was how in the 1960s, really across the board, serious politicians from Barry Goldwater to Lyndon Johnson and JFK, both parties understood that the emerging money system of TV advertising was antithetical to anything remotely close to democracy. This was something that really concerned them. There was tremendous incentive and consensus that we needed to do something about it. We needed to corral this money system quickly. In fact, that was one of the primary motivations for creating PBS in the United States in the first place. One of the things that really got the publics behind the idea was the idea that there would be a place where politics would be covered and there wouldn't be any TV ads. So there's a real tradition in America of understanding this is a problem. It wasn't just a few principled people, but everyone got it. Richard Nixon was concerned about this in the 1960s. Everyone who was really serious about politics got that this was a problem. The Wall Street Journal was editorializing about the need for free airtime to limit the amount of advertising. And I think what happened was we had a moment where it looked like reform was going to come through that peaked in the early 1970s. And then in 1976, the Supreme Court, in a very famous case called Buckley v. Vallejo, basically started the whole process that ended up in Citizens United, which said the governments couldn't really regulate elections as they traditionally had done in American history if it interfered with the right of rich people and corporations to buy elections. And that was the whole process that was begun. And once that begun, the ability to have effective legislation to set up fair, level playing field elections was lost in America. That's where we are today.
And that began equating one vote with $1. And Buckley v. Vallejo is at the heart of, as you mentioned, of subsequent legislation. Of course, all have been removed with – almost all have been removed with Citizens United, and now we've got this other one, McCutcheon, too. So there's no question the direction that the court is taking this. I'm left here only saying, Bob, that I look forward to hosting you this coming Thursday at the UCLA Hammer Forum, where we can discuss this even further. Well, we're not ending on a decisive note here, but I know there's a lot more to be said.
There is indeed, and I hope everyone comes out to it. John and I love talking about these issues, and we'll be glad to talk to people as long as they want to talk to us.
Well, again, I thank you for joining us, Robert McChesney.
My pleasure, Ian. Have a good day.
You too. Again, I've been speaking with Robert McChesney, who is the Gutzel Endowed Professor in the Department of Communications at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. He, along with John Nichols, co-founded the media reform organization Free Press, and they are the authors of Death and Life of American Journalism, The Media Revolution That Will Begin the World Again, Will the Last Reporter Turn Out the Lights, The Collapse of Journalism, and What Can Be Done to Fix It? And their latest book is Dollarocracy, How the Money and Media Election Complex is Destroying America. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.